Blog Talk Radio. Blog Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to the African Knowledge Beyond the Book Club meeting. Tonight we'll be discussing the symbolism, logic, and meaning of justifiable homicide in the 1980s. This is Chapter 15 of the ISIS Papers, subtitled The Keys to the Colors by Francis Cress Welsing, M.D. My wife, Jolivet, are you on the line?
I am. Hello.
Yeah, she's an engineer and producer on the program tonight. And are there any other book club members on the line?
Not on the phone line, no.
Oh, okay.
I have guests in the chat room listening to you live.
Well, all right. Well, welcome all of you here. I'm glad you joined us tonight. If you'd like to make any comments on anything we've said, you remember to just press 1 to speak on air, and you press 1 to back out after you finish making your statement so that you won't, your mic won't be open for the air, okay? Okay. Wait a minute. Let's get right into this text here.
Brother Amin is here.
Yes, I'm here.
Well, Brother Amin, how you doing?
All right. How's it going?
All right. Glad you made it.
Sean is here.
Sean.
Hello.
Welcome. Hello.
Nana is here.
Nana.
I don't think she can talk on the air.
Okay.
Can you talk on the air tonight, Nana?
I'm at the club.
Oh, she's at the club. She can only listen. Okay. And then we have another guest live. So if you'd like to speak, just press 1 and we'll bring you up. It's certain people we force to talk.
There's a good book club members and people who've written, and all the book club members have read the book.
Right. So the members are forced to talk because this is a group meeting. But anyway, so go ahead.
Okay. Well, we're on page 183, chapter 15. For everybody, all the guests that may have a copy of the text, and all the book club members who may have not had a chance to preview the chapter before the meeting began. Well, all right. Page 183. Dr. Welsing states, I'm not going to read it verbatim right now because it probably my vocal inflections aren't that well. Anyway, she says, black people are afraid, but we're going to have to get over fear. And say, so we're going to have to learn how to understand what's going on. We're going to have to begin thinking about a situation, and we're going to have to learn to start being quiet, in other words, stop talking too much about our opinions so we can get our thoughts together. We need to start planning, and we're going to have to do a lot of logistics and analysis in order to get our bearings on what we should be doing, what we should not be doing, and how we could change the things that we do to make them profitable to our cause, which is survival and dominance. He says, we're going to have to learn the meaning and practice deep self-respect. What is deep self-respect? It means that it's not just a bunch of talk like people may say, oh, I'm black and I'm proud. They have to actually even have a thought process that reflects the respect that you have for your family, for your people, and your kinship. Okay, and so she says also that black people are going to have to stop moaning, crying, begging, and stop thinking in that people who just give us a lot of rhetoric, a lot of smooth talk and rap about our situation, and like Jesse Jackson giving them a lot of rhythm and because they're not going to solve our problems. So we're going to have to stop all this dancing and singing and basically escaping through noise and distractive, habits, distracting habits that keep us from focusing our minds on the troubling present and future that we have for us, as well as our past. Also, I forgot to mention, anybody who has a mic open, can please mute their phones, mute their mics out so that all the noise won't be on air. Thank you. Anyway, all of these behaviors and many more absolutely have nothing to do with addressing the challenges and condition of open warfare, which is continually being waged against the black collective. So we got to just drop all of these, you know, extraneous habits which keep us off task. We got to stay focused because we're facing annihilation and permanent subjugation. And so if anybody who wants to change that, that's what must be done. She says we also, we black people don't see the war being waged against us because we don't want to and because we are afraid. Does anybody have any thoughts about all these things that she says that we should, you know, focus our minds on, you know, stop the thing up, stop escaping through music and start planning and all that and face our fears and face and come to grips with reality that we are being attacked and there isn't nothing's going to stop and save until we our perspective. And does anybody have anything to say about that? Member or guest?
Well, I would. Okay.
Go ahead. Go ahead, brother.
Okay. I was going to say that. Okay. I'll wait. Lady first.
Brother Mean, go ahead, really.
Lady first. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. I was going to just put me immediately in the mind of what Sister Ramona Africa shared on Sunday about when he was just pointing out about how we make decisions thinking that we're moving toward our betterment when really every decision and every step that we make is actually to our detriment. And one of the things in particular is always sharing our plan with the enemy. We do lots of defeatist type tactics like that, in my opinion, when I think it is a setup for failure. It's just something that we just do instinctively, and it's the self-destruct mindset that we have that causes us to do that. That's all I was going to say.
Yeah, that's a program. It's called self-destruct program. Fritz Springmeier talked about it in his researches on mind control, is that when a person who has been programmed to be a servant and he attempts to escape the power of his handlers and programmers, he is pre-programmed to engage in destructive behaviors and when he's in a position to try to escape. Paul Mooney made a joke about it. He said, when black man in America, when I'm trying to escape, I don't know if I should snitch on myself when I run away.
Mm-hmm.
No, run away, should I turn myself in when I run away?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the destructive, destructive program you see black people engaging in when they claim to be in a fight for liberation.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
And, yeah, brother, I mean, you had some thoughts you wanted to share with us.
Oh, it was pretty much what you said. I was going to say is that we tend to we do the self-defeating things instead of actually trying to get out of the situation we're in.
Right. I have a question.
And we tell
ourselves. We do.
I ask here.
I'm sorry.
I think part of it is out of fear because we're so used to planning. I mean, we're used to that. We don't know how to behave once we make it to that next step. You know, once I'm there, then what? You know, I'm so used to, okay, I made this plan and it didn't work, so now I'm making another plan. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's sort of like the cycle, you know, like a little hamster
right.
on a little cycle. On that wheel, just keep running and running and running. You know where you're going. Nowhere, you know. But you also know what to expect, you know, more of the
mm-hmm.
same. But once you get over
the
there, yeah. And so once you get over there now, it's like, okay, what next? And think of that. You know, I didn't think
right.
that far ahead.
Right. I don't even think that we even, I don't even think that we instinctively believe that we can do these things. What you were talking about, I lean more toward the fear factor. And I've asked the question before, are we fearful to see ourselves liberated? And I ask that because I think we all instinctively know on a very primal level what it's going to take to liberate us. We know it. And I wonder if we are just afraid to do it.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of that we're afraid to do, but we're afraid to admit that we don't collectively have the courage
right.
to do it. And that's why she, in the chapter on Black Fear, which was our first meeting we had, is that it is known that...
Just mute folks. Okay. All right, go ahead.
It's your mics, please.
I everybody is muted. Just go ahead.
Thank you. Okay. We don't have the courage, and we know we haven't taken the time to program our young to have the courage. So that's just a consistent problem that's going to be with us until at least a critical mass of the Black African captive population decides to bring back the self-respect into the culture of our community.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna I'm just going ahead and share this part here that which will lead us a nice segue into the next paragraph.
Okay.
He says a major strategy in the war against the Black collective is the killing of Black males. Black males are being killed every day in an ever increasing. Other as non-white males also are being killed in ever-increasing numbers. Not a really great sentence. But anyway, she wrote it. These Black and other non-white males are being killed by white males in uniforms who have been authorized to carry guns. This particular form of murder and slaughter is called justifiable homicide.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's the subtitle of this chapter. That they justify, certain white males get authorized to basically kill Blacks. That's where they are. I think they're legal as their law permits them, legal like population controllers or something. Just like the overseers on a plantation. Overseer had the power of life and death.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody on the plantation, on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
So Frederick Douglass talked about a man named Demby who was killed on the plantation because he had been disrespected or something by an overseer, a white person. And he refused to obey, so he went into the pond. I don't know if you remember the story of it. And he stayed in with his neck up and refused to come out, and the...
Blew his head off, yeah.
Blew his head off, that's right. That's the reality of what was going on, and we still see it today. We don't want to own up and look at that. We have not changed our condition considerably. It has not changed. It has remained the same.
Mm-hmm.
We are still... They've been killing us constantly. I just read The Spook Who Sat Behind the Door by Sam Green this past summer, and it was published in 1969, and they were talking about the same things that we were talking about today, about police killings. They were talking about that 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're still talking about the same thing. And we're so, in essence, Black people have not made any progress. None. Matter of fact, it's gotten worse.
Well, certainly we made progress. I mean, we can now live next to the Caucasians and enjoy the pleasures that they have to offer us.
You know, that's interesting because we were living right next to them shortly after we got after 1865. in the postbellum period. We were right. We were very close to where we used to stay.
Oh.
So it's like
even closer when we were on the plantation.
That's the answer. So all we need is a good water to move us right back into their house again.
But what's interesting is our craftiness. The things that we use, they may introduce certain things to us, but we take it and we accelerate it. We bring it on another level, you know, and it just wows them, just like Black Wall Street when they looted the houses, you know, when they looted the homes and they looked down from the hill and they saw the mansions and they were saying that some of these niggas living better than us. You know, some of the things that these niggas have in their houses are better than the things that we have in our own homes, you know, because they don't give us that title of having a home that they have in their houses. It's a little place that we set up shop, you know, and which is the same for today. I mean, you would be surprised if you were walking into some of the little humble establishments that Black people have, because we know how to make things and make it glam. I mean, you know, with little or nothing. And it's not, and I don't know, it's just the little spin that we have, that knack, that talent that we put on things, and whatever we touch, we take it to the next level. And they are envious of that. And so whatever they cannot have, they try to covet or destroy.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
On every level.
That's right. Yep. That's true. And that's a great insight here. And we are going to move this right into this. Is it time for a break?
Yeah, we can take a break.
Okay.
If you want to.
Okay, we can take a break right now, and we'll be right back to discuss, what we have to do to understand our problem and begin to take some measures against our situation. We'll be right after these messages.
Become a part of the Women's Song Community Experience. Find us at facebook.com/womansong. Follow us on Twitter at Woman's Song. And for highlights of our shows, check out our YouTube channel. We will do the thing that many think cannot be done.
All right, we're back with the chapter Justifiable Homicide from the ISIS Papers with the African Oz Beyond the Book Club. Right here on page 184, I'll just go ahead and read this quote right here from the third paragraph. She says, "Our Black collective today has no greater understanding of this war and the phenomenon of justifiable homicide than it did when Black males were being lynched and castrated daily 100 years ago in the period of Reconstruction or reestablishment of white supremacy following the Civil War. Nor does the Black collective have a greater understanding of the current open hunting season on Black males than it did two or three decades ago." She goes on, "But because we really do not understand what is going on, in our impotence and ignorance and our powerlessness and frustration, we start getting mad, fussing, crying, rhyming, begging with picket signs, rioting and misdirecting, hooping and hollering, moaning in our churches and preparing again to vote for any white man or Black who smiles and us, even though he lies to us. These behaviors are all obviously useless. Such behaviors are in vain and will take us nowhere. They will all come to naught, and the problem, the war that is, will simply continue and intensify." Are there any thoughts on those words she's pen for us.
It's interesting that she speaks that way in that book. She does not speak that way.
Oh, no. Don't talk like that in person. That's why I say this book is better than having it on the show.
Oh, you'll say anything.
I sure will. Book is way better than having Dr. Wilson in person.
Oh, he's so mean.
Because you got her when she was younger right here. She, in 1984, Dr. Wilson was, she was 50. She was 50 that year, or 49. And so she still had, you know, she was still sharp. And she lost her edge. Yeah, she was on fire back then.
But anyway,
I
think,
guess the more she sees, the more she feels like, well, I'm talking to, you know, talking to the choir. You know, nobody's really listening. Maybe she,
yeah.
I don't know.
It could be that, you know. After so many years, it seems, you know, it seems like it's getting worse over the years.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
She's like,
she
nobody's listening to me. They haven't listened to me in all these years. What makes me think they're gonna listen to me now? You know.
It seems to me that she's gone into some type of sleep as well. She's apostatized. She doesn't talk like this. I think she has taken drunk from the wrong fountain,
and then,
she's gone to sleep.
And then sometimes there are things that will kind of quench your thirst or set your fire, you know, and you're like, damn, not this again. You know what I'm saying? When you think that you're making progress, and because I know for several of us, and with speaking personally, the Troy Davis incident, even though I knew what the outcome was going to be, it was just like, it just took the wind out. I mean, you know, it's like, damn, this again, you know, now we're back. And it seems like it didn't even just set everything at a standstill. It almost took us back years. And
yeah, it did.
Psychologically, you know, remember your place, nigga, to one of those. That's what that felt
right.
like to me. That was a governmental, remember your place, nigga.
Right, right. She wrote right here, picket signs and all that, which we many of us in this club, we already know that all that picketing and things, all of that is a waste of time, and petitioning and writing letters. So anybody coming, like, I remember it was a while, but there was this thing about a petition going around saying, pardon Marcus Garvey. I mean, that was the, like, silliest thing I ever heard. It was just ridiculous. The people are going to go to the oppressive establishment that has you captive, been having you for hundreds of years, and you're going to beg them to posthumously pardon some social reform or whatever. I mean, that's crazy.
Well, it's the idea of you're still begging. Even in the incident that she was speaking of about Troy Davis, if it had been different, if it had come out differently, the process was still the same. The process is that we had to write our name on a piece of paper and beg and grovel and march and light candles and sing songs and, you know, whatever needed to be done that our captors said, you know, told us this is the process.
Right.
And we had to beg for his life.
Right.
If his life were granted, it was still... you know, there was still dignity lost. There were still, we're still yet captives. We're still at their, you know, they have the power of life and death in their hand. It wouldn't change anything.
You're totally correct, and even more. So I'm gonna take it to another level right here. He was already dead.
Right.
He'd been captive for 20 years.
Right.
If I was captive, I'd be begging for the needle. You know what I'm saying?
And actually, it was just to expose. I think that his life had a purpose. I mean, you know, I know every life has a purpose, but I think that his time there served as a purpose, just as another wake-up call to show those of us who are sleeping, if you don't get it yet, you need to see. You know, this has been going on. This is what's still going on. This is going to go on tomorrow. And I thought it was so ironic that his death sentence came at the same time as one of the murderers of James Byrd, the black man who was drugged and desperate, you know, and I'm like, that's just another slap in the face. And just to think that Dr. Wilson has lived through all of this, you know, you think you're making progress and you're not. You know, you see all of these things And you're like, okay, people, my people, is this enough? You know, it's another one of those, okay, my name is Toby. You know, every time this happens, yes, my name is Toby. You know, you might as well just turn around and just hand it to them. Because
the reason why people get confused is because they don't know what progress is. Progress is not when you have a new shiny car or you got a lot of people from your ethnic group that just wear suits in a society. You don't have progress when you're in a submissive position and you still have another group dominating over you. You don't progress until it is totally reversed. There is no progress unless the situation is reversed and you have been able to punish your offenders, the criminals, and you have been able to exact reparations. That means by force. There is no progress. So anything billed as progress that doesn't have any of those elements, or all of those elements, is not progress. That's called bullshit.
But how do you progress when you don't know, when you think that you are free? You think that you are progressing because certain people
tell you that.
Right, who've been put in place to tell you that. And to teach you those things, that's what they're telling you. Like Dick Gregory said, every time you look in your mirror and you see that cop car and your hand gets real tight on that steering wheel, you're not free.
Right.
You understand? So, but we don't know that. We don't know that.
Well, they do know when their cops show up in their rearview mirror. That's what I'm saying. They know when they go visit their relatives in prison. They know when they're being falsely accused for some crime they didn't commit. I'm saying we know it.
I'm standing outside right here while we're going through this, and cop just stopped, slowed down, looked over my way, and kept going. It's the same thing all over and over. That tells me that I can't stand outside on the phone smoking a cigarette. It just
and
told
that
me.
Sigh of relief that you breathe, that sigh of relief is a reminder that at any given time they have the right to mess with me for no given reason. And
they have
just
the right
like Pac said, it ain't no fun if my homie don't get none, you know. And I look at that as reparations, freedom, whatever. You know, if we're not all experiencing the same liberties, then I'm not experiencing it. You know, what good does it do for me to move out of the hood or move to, you know, a step up? And I'm looking down, and my people are still going through the same thing. It's not right, you know.
And our leaders on the top.
Individual successes.
Our leaders on the top tier tell us this all the time, that things that are done is in the best interest of the U.S. and its Western allies. It doesn't mean Africa, and it doesn't mean Africans, no matter where you are.
That's right.
And they don't lie about it. That's what they say. I heard Clinton say after an attack, in I believe that was in Libya, is that this is what will happen if you... That was with the Osama bin Laden thing. Let this be a lesson to everybody that this is what happens when you go against the U.S. and its Western allies. That's international. And it's on the streets in every hood in the country.
Okay,
if you don't fall in line, that's it.
Okay. We just have a few minutes. So anybody that's in the chat room that would like to listen to the last few minutes of the show, you have to call in 323-580-5707. And I just want to say something to be smart right quick. After y'all started talking about the picketing and all that stuff and how that's not real, it's all facade, and we've been told lies, we lost three callers. Immediately at that time, simultaneously, they had to go because there is a program. We have a program. We've been programmed. Like Sean said, she said to me, she said, well, that's saying that the police car passing by means that he could mess with you. No, it means that he could kill you.
That's right.
That's what it means. That's what Charles was just reading, the justifiable homicide. No, it doesn't mean he can mess with you. He could kill, I mean, right then. And justify it.
Mm-hmm.
Reached in his pocket for the lighter. I thought it was a gun. I didn't know. I killed him.
All he had to do was change the report.
Whatever he wants to justify it as at that particular time. I mean, he can do anything. Say whatever he wants to say. oh, I thought you were someone else. He doesn't even have to be looking for him. I thought you were somebody else. But while I'm here, let me see your license and your ID or whatever. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're supposed to have
your
manumission
paper.
So y'all are making enemies with this wealth issue. I just want to talk about.
That's okay. Get them to move on.
I'm being messy.
I worked in law enforcement. Anybody you put in handcuffs resisted arrest.
That's right.
That's the way they work. They change everything. You know.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You
got to
get out of this.
For years.
Right. And a lot of people want to still believe that we up that they're picketing and petition signing and writing and crying and all it is a letter writing is doing some good, because they've been on their couch and writing letters and they want to feel like, you know, that they've been doing good service to the people and they ain't doing nothing.
Right.
They haven't understood the problem, which would do us some good if they get their education. I think Javier asked a while back, well, what are people to do when they have been told this and that? And it's to get an education and learn the truth. That's what they need to do. Not just sit around and wait for somebody to come and tell them what they should do, but they should know what the situation is and what it requires, and they can know when they're being told bullshit or not. Because, see, they think that I told them some bullshit because I told them that they shouldn't be picking sides. So they don't know what's bullshit and what's real. So they don't know what the real case is. So they need to get an education. See, instead of just going off who they like. Oh, this guy got a nice suit on. You know, his name sounds like it come from this part of the world, so I'm gonna hang with him. You know, we have a lot of people in our community have very superficial means of judging people, situations, and that's why it's not deep. And she just said in the first page one, we have to have a deep self respect, which requires some deep thinking. She said we need to start thinking and analyzing, and it's clear by what you just observed that the most of our community hasn't done that. And they don't want to, because that takes work. That means you're going to lose friends. That's why people aren't going to want to hang with you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's better. It's just easy. Just I can keep pretending and faking that I'm and stay in this little fuzzy zone. Because when they kill you and blow your head off side of the street, off side of the road, those friends ain't gonna ride for you.
Mm-mm, they're gonna say you done got yourself killed. I knew he was going too far.
They're gonna burn some candles and throw some stuff on your grave. They're gonna forget about you in 5 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's the situation.
Now,
in fact, they don't have no self respect.
Has its place, because it lets them know, like, but just like she said, it's a precursor of what's to come. It lets them know that we are seeing, you know what I'm saying, that you're not just going to do this like you did before. You're not just going to come to my house and drag somebody out of my living room and tell me that you're about to lynch them. Oh, no. Mm-mm. But I think picketing by itself is useless. You know, you have to have some work behind it. You got to put in some footwork. You can't just go out there and tap around with some signs. They don't give a damn about that because they know where you are. You're right there on that street holding that sign. You know, because you're not.
And they're going to kill you if they want to.
Now, when you start carrying a gun with that sign, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, when you start arming yourself or doing something else, then that's a different story. But if all you're doing out there is a peaceful little demonstration, then they know where you are. Okay, then they just out there, they see it. You know, but until you get fed up, enough is never enough until you decide it's enough.
And you know, that's the thing that I've been around before. I've stood guard while people picketed in this country and overseas. What was going to happen was you were going to stand out there, picket, shout, and it was irrelevant to the people inside. To the people inside, it was irrelevant. My job was to make sure you don't do nothing silly, or I fired you.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that these people are picketing really held it. Once something is going to be done, it's going to be done. And so a lot of people out there will stand out there with a picket sign thinking, this is not now. Believe me, I would have ran if somebody fired at me. I wasn't gonna stand out there too long if somebody really did something or somebody overran us. I was going to run. But other than that, the picketing is irrelevant.
Right.
You know.
They have in their hand is either a candle or a picket sign. Now you start carrying a gun with that, then you have a different story. You know, or intending to use the sign for more than just the words that are printed on it. you know, but they know where you are. They know that's it. You're peaceful. You're not going to do anything. You don't care, basically. You're just
right.
Going, I disagree with this. Like you vote. This is not a vote. They're not asking for your vote. They don't care. They're not tallying up anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't always have to be violent. You see Occupy Wall Street. Pull your money away from these banks, and that's the end of it. So why are you
picketing without action is nothing. If you're out there picketing, have those signs out there saying we're going to occupy Wall Street and this is how we're going to do it, and like you said, withdraw your money. Then you've made a statement. But just standing out there holding those signs, you're not really doing anything, in my opinion.
A lot of times what we're actually getting caught up in, Sean, is the making a statement. Sometimes you have to understand the idea of being covert.
That's right.
Activity. You can't just tell everybody.
You shouldn't.
What I do. I don't want to hold up a sign and tell everybody what I'm planning or what I'm upset about or I don't like
to do that. That's right.
Just back away.
I disagree with that because I think that if everybody says I disagree with the way they're running things and I'm going to occupy Wall Street and I'm withdrawing my money out, what are they going to do? They can't come make you spend your money. You know, you have to let them know this is why I'm doing this, but you don't have to just, I don't know.
After they can make you spend the money,
they're going to
make you
pay
the bill
or whatever.
To get out.
But just out there, just standing on Wall Street, they don't give a damn about that unless you're doing something like Brother Amin said, like you're withdrawing your money out, and that means something. You know,
I'm telling you that I'm going to be out there
and I'm going to do this.
But holding the picket sign is not required. If you're going to withdraw your money, just withdraw your money.
Right, because all they did was put them holding their money in the account.
That's exactly what they did. That they are not alone, though. Because people have to know that they're not the only one that's doing something. That I have somebody else out there with me. If Sean was the only person that was withholding her money, I'm like, my money ain't that big compared. You know, that's a drop in the bucket. So if I'm the only person that's holding, I want to know, okay, Charles, Jalibet, y'all are all withholding your money too. So, okay, I'm not alone. So we all going to do it. We're going to make the stance, but we're also going to withdraw our money. You know, we're going to hold our money out. Now, I can understand that with unifying people like that, but you also have to do something beyond the picketing. That's what I'm saying, beyond that little conversation that you have out there because you took a day off of work to make your little statement in front of, you know, a building and nobody really cares because they toasting and drinking champagne while you down there because you're still going to go home and put money in their pocket.
Here's the thing. Let me explain something to you about the Occupy Wall Street deal. Okay, you told everybody that you were going to go Occupy Wall Street and you held up signs because you were upset with these banks. Well, then what they did, there was a video where people in Missouri went to go and withdraw their money. That was their action behind the sign. And they said, no, you can't have your money. Whereas had no one went and occupied Wall Street, I could have easily gotten my money, right? So what I'm saying is there are instances where it is not in your best interest to tell everybody what you're going to do.
Always in your best interest to never tell the enemy.
I believe that. It is never in your interest to tell your enemy what the hell you plan.
Yeah,
however, let me say this, Sean. I want to say this on the point about being alone. And this is just an example that Charles and I have noticed in our life. And so I'm just going to say this to you, and maybe it will help. There have been instances, and this is back when we were living in Houston, where we would have bad service or, get mistreated or whatever going into an establishment. And so we say, we'll never go there again, right? And you make that decision, and so you never go there. They have bad service, whatever. It never fails. That business closes down. See, because it's not just you. It's never just you.
Exactly. And that's what I do. And I tell everyone else. And that's why I say I'm not alone. Because when I receive bad service, don't you know, I tell everybody, oh, no, Bex, we're not going there anymore. And this is why.
We didn't tell anybody.
Let them know that. Well,
we didn't tell anybody. I'm saying that.
Word.
Some of us, and that we got to voice our opinion, we got to express ourselves to the people who have offended us, and like we have to get this off our chest. We have to vent to the offender, and that's not what we're saying. Is that that's not necessary? We're not talking about whether you should say something to a friend, a relative. We're talking about the picketing is letting the offender know that I don't like what you did or I don't like what you are doing.
Do we really think that he doesn't know that what he's doing is, you know, bad or wrong? Like, do we think that they think that what they're doing is a good thing? I don't think that.
They know exactly what they're doing that is criminal.
They know exactly what they're doing.
They're robbing.
So when I share with my friends and I let them know, no, obviously bad service, we're not going there anymore. The same thing.
Right. Well, he was not talking about that. He was saying going to the establishment, standing outside of the bank and saying, we don't like what you're doing. This is wrong. You are bad bankers. And stop it. What is that for?
I think that should happen after. I mean, you know, that's like after the touchdown. You know what I'm saying? After you've already withdrawn all your money. That's a celebration. That doesn't come beforehand. I mean, I can kind of see that, too. To let them know we have made a statement, and this is why we withdrew our money from here. But it should happen afterwards.
But I'll tell you, though, one thing that's going to happen for sure, if people in mass said we're going to pull our money out of Bank of America, the U.S. government would stop them.
That's right.
Pulling their money out the bank.
That's why they should pull their money out first and say, this is why we pulled our money out. That's what I'm saying.
But then when you tell them, what they'll do is confide with the other money in, and
they
then you'll still have your money
in.
With. Oh, God. But anyway,
let's just wrap this up because
I know we don't have much
time. We got 3 minutes left, so go ahead on with your final
thoughts. Okay. Well, the moral of what we've covered so far, which I believe is less than half the chapter.
Because
we got off on protesting.
We were making people mad.
I wasn't spending too much time on it, but it had gone away. But anyway, the point is, so far, to recap, we got to become brave. We must face our fear because black people are whom we must confront first. We can't confront anyone else. We must confront ourselves. My neighbor, my cousin, we got to confront the man / woman in the mirror. And by confronting the person in the mirror and taking stock of our own value systems and our own ability to bring into fruition self-respect, that was the motivation. That's the driving force for liberation, for freedom, for social and personal and community transformation. So until we can face ourselves, all these other activities are utterly useless. And personally, that's just what she was saying. But any person must study some type of military science text or just read books about nations and fighting, because black Americans don't know anything about that, and we pretty much make observations off what a little political movements that we've been able to understand, and we try to copy that, modify it here and there with no idea about how to formulate a workable strategy. So with those thoughts right here, we will pick up next week on page 184, paragraph 4, and we will go on as far as we can until we wrap this chapter up on justifiable homicide. And we look forward to seeing you all again next week for a live discussion on Dr. Wilson's work. Y'all have a great evening. Bye-bye.